are back.
We are back.
It has been weeks since we have recorded a podcast. And let me just tell you, it feels very good on this Friday morning to be back in the studio with you.
It is a pleasure and an honor. And it is the last time we recorded, I think it was dumping snow. And now on like a freak March day, I remember, you know, we had some snowstorms and now we're heading into golf season. Morale is high. Affectively, couldn't be feeling better about where things are. Cognitively, I think there was a bit of a disconnect for about the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, we
maybe four.
We got into, I shouldn't even say we, it's me, right? My systematizing follow through got a whole lot of whack.
Yeah.
We went to Florida. We had a work trip. Then it was Easter, we were out of office, this, that, and the other, and there was no process being followed. There was no system being held accountable, and we got off track.
And now we hope to get back on track consistently for all of our listeners and all of our avid followers at this point that we're back to getting on to what Cognitive is and back into this podcast that we're so excited for the support of and hoping that now that we've let things go astray for a few weeks that you're here with us and excited to get back on the journey. But it is. It's just a prime example of how one's intuitive needs can go by the wayside, you know, depending on affective tendencies and, you know, calls to action and tasks and responsibilities that pile up that you don't realize are putting you into instinctive strain. And then you end up in a position where even if something's a priority and something that you enjoy, like podcasting, you know, it takes a minute to get things back into track. So I think it's a really interesting lesson, and we should talk about it more so next week as we get into the follow through and we talk about what that person is and what their needs are. But from a very high level overview, I think this is an incredible example of strain leading to tension, leading to conflict, leading to just, hey, you know what, we'll get back to it when we get back to it. So thankfully, Friday morning breakfasts have kickstarted this right back into where it needs to be.
Fridays now being this complete buffer day for us, right? Like a lot of what we do in our coaching is focus, buffer, free time, and how you spend energy, how you utilize your mental energy, you know, cognitively, affectively, cognitively, whatever. We have set up our Fridays to be a phenomenal day, starting with, like you said, breakfast in the morning, followed by podcasting. And now, you mentioned golf. We're getting into the better weather here, so we'll have client golf probably every Friday afternoon for the next 4 months.
Yep.
But I think it goes to show how the intentional setting of a day, a week, a month, a year can truly do so much for an individual as it relates to managing not only, you know, stress and everything that goes on in your life, but sink, strain, mental energy, you know, how you work throughout the day, go about your weekend, follow up the next week, whatever the case may be.
I think there's probably a lot of entrepreneurs who listen to our podcast that are sitting there and in the same position that I've taken the stance of the majority of my entrepreneurial journey, which is like, I don't know the difference between Friday and Tuesday, right? Like it's Friday, I'm grinding, I'm working, I'm building my business, I'll outwork you, you know, and, you know, kudos to a meeting that we were in yesterday where T was going on one of, you know, his legendary, we'll call them speeches, right, of what that looks like and, you know, brought up a profound point that when you are building a business, there's very few people who are, you know, in today's day and age, motivated to work that time. And I think that that is often misunderstood.
Well, and I think even when people hear, oh man, they just spend Fridays doing nothing. It's like, well, no.
Fridays. That's
Fridays are phenomenal days for us to strategize and not have to put in complete mental focus on building, on doing, on executing, but it's more strategizing and looking forward.
Exactly.
But then there's also the same mindset that, well, on Saturday nights, we work.
Right.
On Sunday mornings, we work. Like, it's not like Friday at 5 o'clock hits and we're completely off the grid, completely off, you know, any communication or work for the next, whatever, 48 hours till Monday morning. It's, no, we work at 10:30 on a Tuesday night or 5:30 a.m. on a Thursday morning.
And I think that that's part of today's theme, right? In addition to getting into fact finding, which we'll talk about in the latter half of today's podcast, our last published episode was the glossary of terms. And when you look at, you know, all of the things that we discussed, the concept of free time, buffer time, and focus time, as you've mentioned, is a critical element to someone finding sync within their life. And whether that's cognitive sync, affective sync, or cognitive sync, you know, it's irrelevant. It's the management of time that will, or the allocation of time and what you're doing within that time that will ultimately lead to your instincts feeling connected, which leads to emotions feeling recharged, which lead to cognitive functioning at its highest ability. So where I was going with that point, in the speech that we were listening to, there's probably a lot of entrepreneurs who are sitting there saying, hey, like, these guys are taking Friday easy. No, we're not. Like, this podcast is absolutely what I would consider, you know, a free time slash borderline or borderline buffer time task, where I'm able to get all these things that are in my head into a medium where other people are going to listen. And so the reason that I put it as a fringe is really it's therapeutic. I think you agree, right? Like, 100%. We love doing this podcast. We love having these conversations. We love publishing it. But there's some buffer work that comes out of this, right? People are listening to this. They're going to see us as potential coaches, or, you know, we're doing some indirect prospecting at the moment. And that is the definition of what buffer work is. Buffer work are the tasks that you do that aren't necessarily forward facing. It's not necessarily selling or putting a system together in your case, or, you know, what someone else might consider focus time.
Well, and when you think about EU, right, and your cognitive mind being a 10 quick start, sitting down and just free flowing a 45 to 60 minute conversation, think about what comes out of your mind and your mouth during these podcasts. Like, there are things that you'll say that, you know, maybe doesn't quite get picked up by the listeners.
Yep.
But I'm like, oh, whoa, you just said something there that you definitely just made up on the fly.
Yep.
Right. Just, it just kind of came out of that creative mind of you that came out of that, you know, I'm going to take a risk here. I'm just going to shoot by the hip and see what happens.
Yeah.
Which happens often with you, but I can then take that and expand upon it.
Sure.
Right. And move it forward into, well, can we use that into coaching sessions? Can we put that into some sort of
tool,
publication, tool, post, whatever the case may be? So again, yes, it is free time, buffer time, but it only helps us recharge for when we have to focus, when we need to be on, when we need to be coaching, when we need to be developing or executing or whatever the case may be.
Well, 2 points. So the first, I don't know if you've been following at all on social media, but we've brought up the concept of strategic coach previously. Dan Sullivan, who is an indirect mentor of mine, and I guess through osmosis yours. But Dan has a great coaching company out of Toronto and has for many, many years. And this year he held his first CoachCon.
I saw that actually. Was that in Toronto?
It's in Toronto.
Okay.
And it's very similar to what Kathy did with ColbyCon and very similar to what we'll do with MGMCon at some point. But, you know, when you look at the theme of this year's CoachCon, it's there is no coach without Babs. And so it's really a dedication to Dan's partner, Babs. I think it's Babs Sullivan. It might be a different last name, but Babs is his life partner. And when you look at what Babs has done for him, she is everything that he accredits his ability. He's also a 10 quick start.
Yep.
He credits all of his ability to actually grow his business to what it became with her initiating follow through. And, you know, again, you and I have that dynamic in our cognitive profiles, and everything that you're touching on in your point is what kind of makes a cognitive office or any cognitive partnership, whether it's business partners, your wife, spouse, whoever, you know, a friendship, a coaching relationship, coworkers, right, whatever the relationship is, the understanding that my ability to ad lib, bringing me into a point of sync, and your ability to field that and put it into some type of system, bringing you cognitive sync, is why this works.
Right.
So, which kind of leads to point two, and at the risk of, and this is a different story, at the risk of these people listening to this podcast, I just got out of a meeting that I totally forgot prior to the podcast that I had scheduled. And this is why, as an initiating quick start, I should not be scheduling meetings.
Wasn't on our calendar, was Didn't not on my radar by any stretch of the imagination.
And I went back and looked at the communication, and I could not have been more enthusiastic that like Friday at 10 o'clock is the perfect meeting time for them. Because
not to mention, we scheduled to record at 10:30 downtown.
Right.
I don't know, 3 days ago?
Right.
4 days ago?
Exactly. But I didn't put it on the calendar because we were not planning on podcasting.
That is true.
You have a golf tournament later this afternoon. I've got some tasks planned this afternoon. So we weren't planning on podcasting today. But then, as we do, got all psyched up about podcasting. I forgot to put that meeting on the calendar. So they walk in, catch you off guard, which
completely
puts you into strain.
However, I am able to modify enough
and for sure.
I can figure it out. And obviously I've learned cognitively now enough. Okay. This happens often.
So it doesn't put you into emotional anger, right? Like correct. If you were my assistant, which you're not, but like if you were my assistant and I didn't tell you
Jody starting on Monday.
Yeah. We can't wait. But like, if you were in that position, and like, I just had people rolling in, like, and you're an initiating follow through that doesn't have a modifying quick start, you'd be like, this guy is,
good luck.
He's all over the place.
Good luck.
I couldn't handle it. That's not the point of why I'm telling the story though. So this happens. We went to our Friday morning breakfast. I met with a student. We ran into some good friends. Shout out Rich Gold, Jim Jaros, if you guys are hearing this. Excited to see some people. And then got to the office, had my meeting, and then was ready, actually ended that meeting early to jump in the car and come down and do the podcast. I came back, I went down the hall and I came back to a text from you, like, just a heads up, your client's here. Like, did you schedule them? Anyways, where I'm going with this is my mind has been so focused on coming down for the podcast and like being like exuberantly on the affective side, excited to come down and record the podcast, that this person that was in the office actually asked me to stop 5 minutes into the conversation. She's like, you are so incredibly knowledgeable on all the things that you're talking about right now. Do you mind if I record you? Because my brain today is on total, it's in total sync. I couldn't be more in sync. So they were talking about whether or not their daughter should attend one of the private schools in the area or the public school, which they had originally planned. And we were going through the pros and the cons and what's happening in the world of college admissions right now, which is a really, really interesting topic. And we could discuss for hours. But, you know, one of the things that is really shifting in that landscape right now is we're seeing a lot of colleges going back to quantitative metrics in terms of how they're viewing applicants. And that's for two reasons. One, COVID disrupting, you know, standardized testing and not needing it and going test optional, which magnified or multiplied the amount of applications that these schools were receiving. And then two, the quantity and the rigor of course selection and schedule selected by the student. And so there's a particular private school in the area that is now offering a pre-AP curriculum, which allows students in high school to then take more AP courses, which if you look at Harvard and what they're putting out as their data right now, and regardless of their political and emotional turmoil that they're going through, the accepted students' quantity of AP courses taken has increased substantially.
Wow.
And so this family was planning on sending their kids to a public district where they're doing a good job of offering availability and more AP courses at the school, but doesn't necessarily have a plan to get students on that track earlier. Anyways, I might be boring some of our listeners, but like, I'm talking about this passionately. Well, and it's because my brain's firing.
Well, and it's funny too, because again, today's episode is focused on the action mode of fact finder, right? And everything that encompasses facts, data, detail, information. And I think you bring a good point up talking about this student where you're wondering, okay, should we send her to, you know, A school or B school? It makes me think of a meeting we had with another client and his parents several weeks ago, where you brought up the point that student should not be going to a research-based university. They should be going to an experience-based university. And the reason being, it comes down to fact finder.
Correct. And so many students, I mean, you go back to the root and the theory that I have put into the college confidence program and, you know, cognitive testing and abilities being a part of that nucleus, right? When you look at UB, right? Like you look at University of Buffalo. If you Google UB, Google it, right? And you look at what it is, UB is a public research institution. Like it's a research school. And in Buffalo, there's so many families who see UB as like this guiding light in education. And I totally understand why. UB is nationally ranked and deservingly so in business. It's nationally ranked in engineering. It's nationally ranked in medicine.
The first quote on the homepage of the website is from a student. It says UB has so many resources as an R1 research institution.
Yeah,
then it moves on.
It's an R1 research institution. And that's awesome. But
it's not for everyone.
Well, and here's the thing. Many families will enforce, and I've seen this for 13 years, that their child absolutely needs to apply to UB.
Local.
Correct.
Families.
Local yes. families. And I definitely, I mean, our algorithm matches students from out of state to UB too. It's that good of a school if it's a fit on a conative, affective, and cognitive level.
Right.
But when you look at the families who insist that their students, you know, apply to UB, unless they're following my strategy, which they don't know ahead of time, which is using UB as an appeal leverage metric because of its ranking and the fact that it's state tuition. And anyways, I'm giving away some of my secrets right now. But, you know, if you're just having your student apply to UB as a legitimate option from a financial perspective, you're doing your student a total disservice. Because if they're conative, and this is a perfect segue into Fact Finder, and we can use it as an example for Fact Finder as we explain the zone today. If your student is a preventative or even an accommodating Fact Finder, and you send them to an R1 research institution, which is designed for someone who's an initiating specifier and enjoys getting into those details and self-guides themselves into research.
Needs to.
Right, exactly. They have the need to be there. Then UB can be a fit. But if not, and I talking about my journey, I went to 4 different institutions, UB being one of them, had an absolute blast affectively, had one of the most fun semesters of my college experience. Academically,
wasn't a fit.
Not only was it not a fit, when you're at a research institution, now you went to Xavier, yep. You don't really know what a research right. institution is like. You stayed at Xavier all 4 years. Okay, so when you look at what a research institution is, there are almost zero mandates for in-class necessity. Like they don't have an in-class mandate, right? You can miss class as much as you want.
Wow.
Because at the start of, and that's not good, doesn't go for every professor, it varies. But, you know, my experience was 3 out of my 5 courses when I attended UB, there was no attendance policy.
Right.
So you would go to class, you know, and you'd listen and sit through a lecture, but that lecture might not have any relevance to the homework that was due the following class period. All of that was put into the syllabus. Well, guess who loses their syllabus the day after, you know, the first class?
The simplifying Fact Finder.
And the initiating quick start.
Right.
But that's a whole nother bag of
right.
worms. So I was there with Jackson. And I have never profiled Jackson, but I would assume that his conative abilities are very similar to mine.
Right.
He's an ad libber. He's very spontaneous. I
Rip
don't
Baker.
Think that he's doing too much research.
You're not Jackson. You're just
so when you look at, you know, where we were and in the same major, there were so many classes at UB where we would get the syllabus and there would be no attendance policy. And then the class, the entire syllabus would be based on a midterm, maybe one project and a final.
Grade,
so we were just like, all right, see you at the midterm.
Good luck.
Like, that's that. Like, never going to class again. Because there's no assignments. There's
right.
no attendance policy. So me being a 10 quick start, right, I always believe that I can get everything done at the last minute. The syllabus does define what the test is going to be on. So, you know, I'm being a little bit comical with saying I lost it. I'd keep my syllabus. And then, like, when I knew the midterm was coming close, I'd go through and it'd be like, okay, the midterm's gonna be on chapters 1 through 7. I'd just cram those all into the night before, get a B and move on.
Right.
Like it's
right.
just, that's all it took. But for someone who is an initiating Fact Finder that wants to sit through that lecture and then apply it to their own research and get into the specifics, UB is an incredible school. For me, I got nothing out of it.
Well, and E, obviously we've been talking about Fact Finder for the last few minutes as it relates to students and academics and how it works with picking a university or what school you're going to go to launch your career. But this also works and operates and relates to jobs and careers and day-to-day tasks and roles and responsibilities in your job, in your career, right? So like when you think about our profile as fact finders, right? We're both three fact finders. We're both simplifying fact finders. The last roles we ever want to be in or should ever be in is one that relates to research, analyzing, fact finding, digging into the details, gathering all the information, right? Like if we were ever financial analysts, right? If we were even accountants to a certain extent, lawyers, right? Like all of these professions and industries and jobs and again, task roles and responsibilities that relate to digging into researching, analyzing, uncovering the facts and the details, we would be in strain all day long, which only leads to burnout, which leads to, you know, this mess of investment from the employer, a waste of time on our side. And then you're stuck wondering, well, has it all been for nothing? Have I been in this career, you know, for whatever, 2, 3, 5, 10 years? And
you're describing it. Tension.
Right.
Right. Like right. Tension that boils over. Anyways, not right. to cut you off.
But again, it's so the whole point being, it is very difficult to make decisions and understand what you need in order to be your best self relating to your work and duties and relationships without understanding who you actually are.
100%.
And again, there are obviously thousands, if not obviously millions of people out there who have, you know, gone through their entire career just fine. They've gotten by. They're, you know, maybe they were cognitively matched up with the right roles and responsibilities, but it was not based on their true understanding of themselves, right? I mean, we work with clients now who come to us and they're like, hey, listen, I've had a great 15-year career since I got out of college, but I absolutely hate what I do. Like I go to work all day and I hate it. I leave, I'm exhausted. Why is that? And then you start working with them and putting them through our discovery process. And it's like, well, you shouldn't have been that for the last 15 years. Like that's the only way we can describe it, right? Because the only result from their day to day is strain. And it's on one end, it's super sad, right? Because we're fortunate enough to figure this out early in our lives, early in our careers. But it's also so exciting once they understand it and see it and get it, because they almost feel like they have this opportunity to rewrite the rest of their life and rewrite the rest of their career and how they're going to succeed, how they're going to, you know, fulfill their whatever motivates them type of thing. But it comes down to this, like when we work with individuals that are in strain, so much so that they're, you know, on the verge of burnout, I just wish we could have gotten to them earlier.
Well, and think about one of our clients in particular right now, where it's an institution or a firm, you know, littered in fact finders, right? They're all initiating fact finders.
Well, you have to be.
Right.
To an extent.
But you look at the difference in how they work with each other, how they work within their individual groups, how they work with different leaders.
Clients,
again, even in their roles and responsibilities. And some of them, when you measure their B and you measure what it takes to be successful within their role, or what they perceive to be necessary to be successful within their role, they're in total sync.
Right.
And then you got about 50% or more that are taking it, and it's like, oh wait, I'm in total strain here. I'm in complete strain. I don't have time to do my specifying. I don't have time, you know, to explain all of the information that I've researched. And so that, you know, you put it very simply, but very, you know, profoundly, is sad. Like it's sad that people are out there and they feel on a day-to-day basis that, man, I could be telling so much more, or man, I could be, you know, giving these high level overviews and getting us into the next task, or hey, like, you know, I just love to sit and learn, like, and they don't get to.
Right.
And so like you spend a bulk of your life, let's not even call it your career, because in many cases it's tough to separate the two.
It's outside of work as well. 100%.
You just spend this chunk of your life in strain, and you don't even know you're in strain. And then you take it home, or you take it to work, or you take it, you know, on your shoulders. And then people wonder why everybody is anxious and everybody is depressed and everybody has issues. It's because they're not fulfilling what their instinctual needs are.
Well, and I think that's what our clients almost feels the worst about, is they never knew why, right? They like, why am I exhausted when I leave work? I haven't exerted any sort of physical energy at all. Why am I leaving the office upset and drained and getting home and pissed at, my son dropped his milk on the ground and now I got to pick it up and you're pissed. It's like, well, they're 4 years old. They're going to make mistakes. They're going to make spills.
Right.
When in reality, if you were in sync a majority of your day, that doesn't bother you as much.
No.
Right? So you make the point, right? Where it's not just your career. It's encompassing your entire life, both professionally and personally, which is why, you know, when you look at the relationships you have in your life, whether it's love relationships or father or mother or son or daughter, whatever the case may be.
Friendships,
all of it. There's a reason why people get along, why they don't get along, why people work well together, why they don't work well together, right? Like I bring up the example all the time with me and my brother, right? Where Jake is an initiating fact finder. I'm a simplifying fact finder. And the bulk of our, call it spats, disagreements, you know, whatever, relates to information. Yep. It relates to facts and figures and details. So when we're on the beach down in Florida, trying to enjoy a vacation, and Jake's reading a textbook, God bless you, and I'm, you know, having a cocktail, trying to enjoy myself, just relaxing. There's tension there, right?
Right.
But again, that gets Jake in sync. That gets Jake fired up. That gets Jake feeling like he is energetic and authoritative. And so you need those types of people, but on the contrast, it's completely insane to me because his profile and my wife's profile are so similar and we get along great. Not that Jake and I don't get along great, but, you know, we've gone our whole lives with this tension and conflict of fact finding. And I was able to explain that to Kelly very early on, that all has been alleviated.
2 points. Again, one, some of that is just sibling rivalry.
100%.
So you go to
just tough love.
You go to affective and brothers fight. Yes. Like it's just what you're meant to do with your brother, which leads to my brother's profile is a 5'8" 2'6". 5'8" 2'6".
That's Alex's?
Yeah. Couldn't be any more different than me. We would be in tension everywhere. It's just like, it's crazy how different the two of us are, but you know, his follow through is so long, you know, and needs it and needs to put systems into action. And we've never really gotten cantankerous over it in the past decade, but you know, it doesn't make sense to me, right? It doesn't make sense to me at all to try all these different career paths and to try, you know, to find your way. And, you know, thankfully he did, but it's like, to me, it was just like, just do something, just create something. And like, it just doesn't make sense to someone who doesn't have it. So to go back to fact finding and the second point that you made, and actually an earlier point that you made, personal relationships are just as critical to your overall cognitive health and your cognitive sync as your work relationships. And that's why Thrive Together is something that I think we're all excited about launching and having as an opportunity. That's going to be a personal relationship coaching company, and mostly, you know, romantic relationships and marriages and all the stuff that comes with it and connecting on a cognitive level.
Parenting, all of that.
Yeah. And it's just so important for people to understand, because your example is so real to anyone who has a toddler, right? It's like you spend all day, think about being in tension or being in strain all day at work and then going home and just having absolute pandemonium. And, you know, it's just affectively where are your emotions supposed to go if your cognitive has already been burnt out throughout the day?
Well, and for the listeners out there, you will relate to that, right? Even E and I, who have engulfed our lives with this theory of conation and truly everything we do relates to it, to the point where we were on the golf course the other day. I was struggling a little bit and Evan looks at me, he goes, why do you not lean into your cognitive strengths on the course? I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, you got no process at all. You're doing something different over the ball every freaking time. Point being, everybody goes through strain throughout their day, right? Yep. So it gets back to this original point of focus, buffer, free time, and controlling or organizing your days and weeks and months and years of how do you take that strain and get back into sync? And right, and it's a combination of performing tasks, roles, and responsibilities that will get you back in sync. It's a combination of utilizing and thriving on, you know, buffer time and free time to just reset and recharge your batteries. But it all boils down to, if you don't know how to do that, if you don't know what's actually putting you in that strain or stress or tension or conflict or whatever in the first place, you're going to try a million different things and half of them will be a waste of time, a waste of energy, a waste of money, a waste of everything.
Well, and the common thought to it is, yeah, it was just a bad day.
Right.
Yeah, I just had to do that. Yeah, you know, they asked me to do it. I'm a team player.
Right.
Yeah, you know, she asked me to come up with a list for the backyard and, you know, I'm going to do it. But like, that's a complacency and normalcy that so many people, you know, everybody goes through on an everyday life or an everyday basis. And unless you are cognitively aware,
right,
there's no way of stopping it. There's no way of you recognizing that this is putting me out of my instinctual nest and it's putting me into a place where my emotions are being compromised because my instincts are being put in strain.
Well, think about that typical worker who's out there right now, who got out of college, got a job, was there for, we'll call it 18 to 36 months, and was like, you know what? This isn't for me. I'm going to go find a new job.
Right.
And found a new job. And it was something probably very similar to what they did, just had a new company.
Right.
New people, new faces, new start, new beginning, right?
Right.
Okay, we're going to start fresh. We're going to start clean. We're good to go. But it's a similar role that is cognitively not a fit for you. And it's the reason why you left in the first place. And now you're doing the same thing over and over and over again. Every,
just with different, you know, people.
2 to 4 years, you're changing a job, you're changing a career, you're not actually growing or building anything. You're just going from one bad place to the next.
What's been the buzzword of this week? Not to put you on the spot.
All week?
Yeah. We've talked about companies building
infrastructure.
Culture.
Culture.
Infrastructure is good too. But like when you look at culture,
yeah,
and you look at what you just described, I think so many people try and find better culture fits as they go through these career transitions and assume that what they have been struggling with or not enjoying about their role or their profession boils down to leadership, or it boils down to their coworkers, or it boils down to a lack of infrastructure or too much infrastructure,
right?
Right. And what they don't realize is that it's not so much the culture, it's more so the cognitive, and it's more so the strain that is not aligning with the way that they need to do things. So you could go to, you know, a Google campus and have the free cafeteria and the slides to go through and the meditation rooms. But if the role itself and the responsibilities and expectations of that role put you into cognitive strain, all the culture in the world is not going to eliminate or even shade at any point the strain and the eventual burnout that you're going to go through.
Well, and that's on the side of the employee.
Correct.
You could flip that to the side of the employer too.
Right.
And think, okay, how do I, as chief human resources officer, as COO, as CEO, as any executive leader, manager of the firm, how do I help build a positive culture at our firm?
Yep.
And a lot of the times it's half day Fridays, it's pizza parties, it's,
look at your LinkedIn poll.
It is. It's off campus, you know, something or other, happy hours, this, that, and the other. When in reality, people want to feel engaged. They want to feel empowered. They want to feel like what they're doing matters. And that's culture. It's not the fun giveaways. It's not the, you know, hey, you get a half day on Friday. Yes, that all goes into somebody's affective moods and how they feel about their role. But as you mentioned, Evan, if somebody or multiple people or full teams or whoever at your company, if they're in cognitive strain, you'll never get an engagement.
That's why I'm putting it on record right now that you cannot build culture without conation.
You can't.
You just can't. I don't care what you put in there. I don't care what features. I could just, you know, repeat the list that you just so astutely put, and I won't. But, you know, you can give people what you think they want. But when you're acting on what you think they want, you're catering to the affective.
Correct.
The affective is the emotional, right? The affective is ever-changing. You go through, and we've asked the trivia question, how many emotional shifts you go through throughout the course of the day, and it's thousands. And with social media, it's potentially tens of thousands. And with all of the things, especially in like the climate of where we are as a society right now, maybe even more than that. So the more leaders and the more companies try and build culture on the affective and the half days and the dress downs and the pizza parties and the whatever, the gift certificates, the more they're going to be left scratching their heads, wondering why it's not working.
Well, and here's the perfect example, right? Again, we'll go back to fact finding.
Yep.
As a simplifying fact finder, if I joined a company in an analyst position or any type of role that requires digging into details, that requires turning over each leaf, that requires researching and taking the time to dig into the information, you can throw every trick in the book at me, right? You talk about the pizza parties, the happy hours, the, you know, let's take you to a ball game, let's have a half day on Friday. It does not matter, because those are, I'm going to say, band-aids on broken bones, but it's not even that, because it's so much deeper, where the only way you'll be able to change the way I feel about my job, the company, my team, my leader, my manager, whatever, is to get me into cognitive sync.
For sure.
And the moment someone is in cognitive strain and staying in cognitive strain a majority of their day, you've lost them. And if that goes on for weeks, for months, for God forbid, years at a time,
yep,
you are getting less performance. You are getting less out of your investment. You are, you know, probably spending a lot of time and energy trying to fix that person, help that person, get them to a spot that you need them to be at. And that person is just never going to get there. And it's not their fault. And it's not that you use the cognitive profile as a crutch, because we all have to go into sync at certain points throughout days, weeks, years. But when it's a majority of the time, it's just not a right fit.
Yeah.
And it's just not.
And there's nothing that you can do as a leader to make that person fit.
Right.
There's nothing that you're going to be able to do to make them fit that role and responsibility. Now, can you realign them? Can you put them into a new position? Can you optimize them under different leadership? Potentially, you know,
right.
And maybe even absolutely.
And they might be a rock star just in the wrong role.
Correct. And that is something that we do in team optimization and in a matrix of sync and strain. And, you know, it's very evident, like it's very apparent when a company is aligned here. I guess this is, let's take it from the top down, right? Like when you have leadership that clearly or diligently takes the time to define what their expectations are of each role, of each leader, of each employee, then it becomes much easier to use the cognitive or to use the, you know, the MGM discovery process or something of the sort to its full ability, because you're setting clear and blatant guidelines and expectations of what's expected of the role. And then someone who's coming in profiled, or at least, you know, I guess at the very least, just cognitively profiled,
right,
hopefully with more of the, you know, discovery tools in place. But they're coming in and they're saying, well, yeah, no, that would kill me. And like a lot of people will say that they'll do anything, right, to get the paycheck or to earn the finances. But when you're aligning someone's 4 M's of success,
right,
you're aligning someone's 1 year future focus, you're aligning someone's DOS, you're aligning someone's cognitive profile, and all of that is being factored into the company's new culture.
Right.
Then you find top A grade A workers. And I don't care if those people are coming from, you know, any type of background, it gives them the ability to say, this role's responsibilities align with what my needs are.
Well, and it goes so much further than just a well-written job description, right? Because Evan and I, could take the same role in the same company, the same job description, but we're going to do those jobs completely different.
100%.
So if...
And affectively, if somebody gave us an affective assessment, both of us would be the top candidate for that position.
Exactly.
But so, cognitively, we couldn't be more different.
So if you're the hiring manager, if you're that team leader, if you're that executive who's looking to hire someone, yes, is a good job description necessary? 100%. But how do you expect that role to be done is way different than here's the role. Can you do it?
Because
everyone can say, yes, I'm going to do it.
And let's make it tangible for the listeners. Like when let's say it was a sales position, because both of us could very easily be in sales, right? If you,
we are in salesy.
Yeah, but we're kind of. Yeah. I mean, we're, yes.
But yes, we could go get a sales position.
Say that we were going to work in tech sales, right? Software sales. Yeah. Like we were going to go, and that's, you know, I mean, there's a billion jobs in tech sales right now. I mean, I guess a lot of companies are scaling back. Nonetheless, if you're a leader who expects that your employees are going to sit through sales meetings and they are going to design a process and they are going to run it through you and they're going to show you your prospect list, right? Then you would be a great fit for their sales teams. You're charismatic, you have the affective personality, you would close, you know, who knows how many millions of dollars of sales for this company, but you'd also perform it in a way that aligns with what the leader needs cognitively in order to feel that you are on the arrow of where they'd like you to be.
Right.
If I went to that same leader and told them that like my strategy is ad-libbing and networking and just going out and I'll make the sale
picking
and
let me phone.
Be, I'm gonna be go. Persuasive and go, I would put that leader into strain, and if he enforced what he expected of the role as the way that it's done, he would put me in strain or she would put me in strain. So the point is, even though both of us and what's commonplace is an affective assessment prior to engagement in the role would score the exact same for that position, the way in which we would do it and the way in which we would lead to strain is completely different. So I think this whole pod has taken a total segue into culture and into, you know, more conation and more conative, and that we've touched on FactFinder quite a bit, but I think it's an important lesson for people to understand right now that now more so than ever, the ability or the reality of falling into strain is so much, it's so much easier to go into strain now with cultures that are not aligned from the top down and with people desperate to take roles that fit the financial responsibilities of where we are in our economy. You know, people are out there looking for the monetary positions and it's leading to more strain than ever.
Well, and best case scenario for these employers and employees is, right, and this here's the shameless plug, is that they engage with MGM coaching during hiring, right? Make that proper investment early.
Make the investment in understanding who's on the team first.
That's what I'm saying. Not the investment in us, the investment in your team, the investment sure. in who you have, the investment into understanding what is best for well, we you, just the talking, company, the role.
Think about the accounting firm who we were meeting with recently that has retained an ongoing one-year relationship with a firm that's from out of state that specializes in, you know, headhunting for that profession, and how much of that is culture. I mean, we've been doing that for years now, right? Like, I mean, the company is new, but in terms of its idea and what College Confidence Coach does and, you know, how we've worked with professional organizations in the past, that's what we're preaching.
Right.
If you really want to enhance the culture of your company, if you really want to bring clarity and bring people's likability and, you know, performing, people want to perform as A players. They want to go hit the home runs for their coach. They want to go out there and win the Super Bowl for their owner, right?
Right.
People are dying for that. If the owner can't articulate what's necessary in order for that team to win, if the coach can't articulate what plays need to be ran for that game, it's never going to happen.
Well, and think about how many companies are out there that say, well, I've done that, right? We've been DISC profile. We've done Myers-Briggs. We've done Gallup Strength Finder. And it's like, yeah, okay, great. Those are nice to have and they're great in the moment. But that's the difference, right? Because if you take DISC or Myers-Briggs or SPQ, any of those affective assessments today, right? May 17th, when we're recording them, your result could be one thing. You take it, we'll call it 6 months from now, a month from now, 3 weeks from now, 5 years from now. it's going to be different.
Our babysitters last night, she's moving, she's relocating down to Charlotte, and she was working previously for Paychex or one of the payroll companies. And she took whatever profile they use. I don't know if she actually told me what it was, but she's like, yeah, and I, you know, it said I'm extremely extroverted, but like, I hate being extroverted. Like,
yeah.
I like being introverted. I like just having like, give me a task list and like, let me work through it. And I was like, well, are you articulating that on your resume for jobs down in Charlotte where you're moving? She's like, no. And I was like, well, good luck.
Right.
I was like, let me help you. Right. You know, let's put this into to word in action. But that's just one simple example of how many of her are out there in the world applying for the jobs that you're posting as a company or as a leader or whatever. And you're just getting people who are desperate for work or that are desperate for the finances or that are desperate for, you know, what they perceive to be a culture. And you see them as this knight in shining armor because they're applying and they're willing and they're ready to step in and I can start tomorrow. And in reality, it's just another 26-year-old in their third transition that's buried in $30,000 worth of Amex debt.
Right.
And they need a job.
Right.
So it's not that, you know, those people, we're not shaming those people for being in that position, but like they are not looking at job opportunities with, oh my gosh, this could be my forever position. That world and that culture at this point is all but eliminated. I mean, the thought of having a 30, 40 year career at this point to our generation and certainly younger seems like a fairy tale.
Because you're right. You think of, you know, our grandparents' age, right? The before the baby boomer, whatever that generation was. I mean, they would start working at a company at 18, 19, 20 years old.
Work there until they retired.
Retire there at 65 and be done.
But like that was again, you could get down 100%. To a million different factors, but you don't have that anymore. There is no loyalty.
Right.
And so leaders are facing this distinct challenge of how do I find players that will A, perform the role the way I need it, optimize the team the way that we hope, and B, you know, hopefully build into some type of loyalty or retention where I'm not scrambling for the next person. And the only way to do that, the absolute only way to do that, is to have a discovery process that at the very least is rooted in conation.
Correct.
Correct. Point blank. And then, you know, there's so much more that goes into it. You want to look at the other two areas of the mind. You want to go into, you know, all of the discovery toolbox elements that go into placement and HR and marketing and, you know, sales and whatever those roles and responsibilities may be. But if you don't have it, where are you going?
It's unbelievable. Culture.
Culture.
It's a big thing, man.
That's it.
It's wild.
I feel like we have overloaded. As per usual.
Yep,
so
always.
We invite everyone to, you know, play this back, ask questions, write in, comment. And if any of this resonates with you and you do feel like, hey, it's time for me to at least learn what my Konative profile is, call us. You know, we're here. We're
a
call away. We do individual coaching. And if you're a leader of an organization listening to this today and it's resonating with you, we invite you to get on the wait list sooner than later, because once this train has, you know, gone through and really revitalized into the definition of what culture is, we don't expect that it's slowing down anytime soon.
Oh, and we don't want it.
Well, we're here to optimize as many as we can.
That's exactly right.
Hit them with the outro.
Let's hit it.